This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to an iFanboy Special Edition, T2 Trainspotting. Hello, and welcome to a special edition of iFanboy. We're going a bit rogue here. I'm Ron Richards, and with me is Josh Flanagan.
I mean, I know it's not about a comic book.
Right. No, we're clearing this up that it's not about a comic book, although it's comical. But after seeing the sequel to Trainspotting, T2 Trainspotting, we both felt that we just needed to talk about it.
And it turns out we have this platform.
Right. So there you go. You may never hear this, but if you do, we hope you enjoy it as you listen to two aging hipsters come to grips with getting old.
and what a show for it.
Yes. So to catch up for those who might not know what we're talking about, T2 Trainspotting just recently came out in theaters, directed by Danny Boyle, with a screenplay written by John Hodge, based on the writings of Irvine Welsh, the books Trainspotting and Porno. And it is the sequel to Trainspotting, which originally came out in 1996.
Six.
Yes. Yep. And you might remember Trainspotting as being an early Ewan McGregor vehicle, as well as Johnny Lee Miller and Robert Carlyle, who've all gone on to have great careers. What's the Big Monty with Robert Carlyle and Johnny Lee Miller in the Elementary, and Ewan McGregor, of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's Ewan. And I forgot that this was a thing that you couldn't do. But there's two Ewans in this movie, so I want to make sure.
Ewan and Ewan, right.
Yeah. Ewan Bremner had probably a 10 to 12-year career of being the not understandable buffoon.
Right, yes.
In things.
Spud. Trainspotting 1996 was the movie about heroin, or at least that was how it was marketed. But it actually was possibly, I will argue, one of the most important movies to me of the 1990s.
I was thinking this as I walked out, and this is like I thought, oh no, I'm the kind of person who thinks that movie was really important to me.
Yep.
But it was.
Yeah.
And the reason it was, and you know the thing that was going around Facebook where it was like, list your favorite movie from every year you've been alive?
Right.
I started to do it, but it takes forever because I'm old.
And also that is a stupid exercise. But anyway, neither here nor there.
But it was actually kind of fun to like look through the things. But anyway, when I got to 96, I was like, oh, it's Trainspotting. Like there was no there was no doubt about it. For me, that was like the first indie foreign movie that I went to see in a theater when I got to college.
Exactly. So like for me at least, I had gotten into – there was an art house cinema in the town next to my hometown that I started going to in high school. Like I saw Clerks there in its first theatrical run. Saw Backbeat. Do you remember that movie?
I do.
Yeah, the Beatles and Hammer. I saw it in the theaters. Right. So I was already into kind of the independent movie kind of stuff. But then when we got to college, that we were lucky enough to go to a college that had like two art house theaters. We had had Fall Creek and Cinemopolis, right?
And then also you had Cornell.
Oh yeah, and Cornell. Yeah, fuck Cornell. But anyway,
Cornell. I saw a ton of great stuff there.
Yeah, no, true. Yeah, me too. But yeah, but it was really kind of it was our freshman year. It was of the moment, and it like neither of us have taken heroin that I know of. I haven't. I wouldn't necessarily say that I relate to the material, but for some reason, this movie just really stuck as a tentpole of the mid-90s, you know?
And also, like, it's one that a lot of movies from that time that I watched, and I was like, oh my God, I loved it. It was amazing. I've watched this movie a lot of times since then. Not all the time, but every time I watch it, it's better than I remember. It aged extremely well I mean, this was also Danny Boyle's sort of big debut, certainly to Americans.
Yeah, it was his second movie, his first being Shallow Grave, which many people think is his best movie to date. But that's another conversation. But
it isn't.
Yeah, I know. I found out people really don't like him. But anyway.
He's a guy, like, I don't like everything he's ever done.
Yeah.
But the things that I have, like, I'm gonna go with like 2/3 on that. Like, he's a goddamn British treasure.
Yeah, he is. No, but I read some reviews of Trainspotting 2 where like the reviewers went out of their way to talk about how much they hate him, and I was like, wow. Huh. Anyway, but neither here nor there. At least for me, Trainspotting also represented a moment in time musically.
Sure.
Because the soundtrack was an amazing mix. It was like, you know, it was this wave of British pop. You know, like Blur and Elastica and Republica, but also like Lou Reed and Iggy Pop.
Yeah, it was American stuff from like the 70s that would have just made its way to Scotland, I guess, at that point.
Right, yeah, and us as idiot teenagers in college didn't quite – like at the point when Trainspotting came out, I couldn't tell you how important Iggy Pop and the Stooges were. You know, but this movie helped me find that out just through Lust for Life. Sure. And so like that's an important point for that. But that's Trainspotting. Then for years, so then after Trainspotting came out, Irvine Welsh came out with the sequel book Porno. And I remember when that came out, everybody said it was awful. And I didn't even read it. I didn't, you know, and then, but for years there were rumblings of them doing a sequel to Trainspotting. And every time it came up in the news or I saw someone talking about it, I kind of winced and groaned. And I was like, I don't want that. Don't do, you know. And then the rumor was is that Ewan McGregor and Danny Boyle weren't on good terms, and so without McGregor they wouldn't do the movie and all this stuff, but then they reconciled, and then it seems as if they got their shit together very quickly. They shot it a year ago, March 2016, and now it's out. It like came together very quickly, and you know, when it premiered in the UK before it premiered here in the US, and I avoided hearing what it was about. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to go see this, and went to go see it as soon as it was available, as soon as it was playing in New York. And as I came out of the movie, I was like, I got to talk to somebody about this. And I think I texted you and I'm like, Josh, you got to see this.
I was more excited about this coming out than any of these other, like the nerd movies that come out. This for me, I was like, and I didn't want to know anything about it. There was that really great teaser and I watched that and that was enough. And, but the thing was, I didn't realize that like it wasn't playing anywhere.
Yeah. Well, cause
weird.
It opened in a limited release first and it's opening wide, it opened wide on March 31st. So,
Okay.
Yeah. So
I had to make a trip.
Yeah.
Like it was a thing.
Yeah. I'm impressed. When you texted. So what happened was that I said, Josh, you've got to see this. And then what happened to me at least was days after seeing the movie, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Like I've been just processing and thinking about it. I had dinner with friends on Friday night, and one of the reasons why I wanted to hang out with them was because I knew they'd seen it, so I could talk to somebody about it. Mm-hmm. And then out of the blue tonight, I get a text from Mr. Flanagan. That you just saw T2 and we need to talk. And so we said,
no, the credits were rolling.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I had to drive back from Boston. I had a whole special trip.
Yeah. So here, I'm impressed that you went to Boston to see it. Wow. So here we are, ready to parse and discuss T2 Trainspotting. And, well, let's start off with Josh. Why don't you read to me your text that you wrote to me, from the theater.
Just finished T2. Holy fuck. If I watch a movie that's better than that this year, I'll be amazed. And for some reason, there's a capital Z, but I don't think that matters. So I was just explaining it to my wife when I got back because she loves when I do that. explain to her what was great about a movie she didn't see and doesn't care about. No, but I mean, so basically what you've got is you've got the characters who are all the same people.
Yep.
20 years later, they are really 20 years older, and it's 20 years later for them and for us and for everybody.
Yep.
And Renton goes home, you know, for the first time. And so he's looking around and he's seeing images of the past, meaning pieces of film up from him from 20 years ago. Yep. And there's this strange nostalgia, ennui, sadness, but also like, oh, there was some good about that all at the same time. And it makes you feel odd and displaced. And like, I've been feeling that lately. I've gone back to places that I was in 20 years ago. And so that feeling to me was incredibly immediate. And then they would do other things throughout the course of the movie, which would be to replicate shots from the first one.
Yep.
Some of them are pretty obvious. Others were not. It's just that I was pretty familiar with
there was some quote. Real subtle visual language in here. Like,
yes.
So what got me the most about this movie was that, and I feel like a lot of reviewers got it wrong, because a lot of reviewers chalked it up to, you know, going back to the well, to trying to relive glory days, to old men trying to, you know, recapture their youth, and that they didn't, they missed it. They missed the point. And what happened was, what got me was that the echoes of a life previous, you know, like, so Mark Renton, Ewan McGregor's character, walking around, you know, his old stomping grounds in Edinburgh, and you just hear the echo of that, of Underworld Born Slippy, like the doon, 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 you know, like, the, you know,
yep.
just the echo of it. And like, it was so incredibly poignant because we all know exactly what that means. And you know, without showing what he's thinking, you know exactly what he's thinking and feeling, and it made my chest feel hollow. Like it was so visceral, and it probably has something very much to do with us, you know, that we're getting older and dealing with similar kind of things.
Absolutely. I went a few months ago. Like, I stopped in the town where we went to college. I hadn't been there in 20 years. It felt exactly like that.
Yeah.
It was like the look on his face, which is like, "Is this really all happened?
Yeah.
What do I do now? What do I think about that?" And that's exactly, it was exactly the same.
And so now from there, what's interesting is that, so he, you know, kind of reunites with his friends who, if you remember the first Trainspotting movie, he had fucked over at the end of the movie. And he's dealing with that. And, you know, the Spud, who we mentioned earlier, who you can't understand a word he's saying, unfortunately, is still addicted to heroin. And, Sick Boy, played by Johnny Lee Miller, is, you know, has inherited his family's pub that is in the middle of a dump, it seems like, a horrible part of town, and is, you know, and still continuing to do shitty underworld wannabe scams. You know, like, his latest thing is he's secretly videotaping people with a prostitute and blackmailing them for money, you know, while all the while being addicted to cocaine. And then, of course, the last piece of the puzzle is Robert Carlyle's Begbie, who orchestrates his prison break. And so now they're all back in Edinburgh, and now Mark Renton comes back, and it's kind of coming home to roost. And the movie then picks up the same episodic quality of the first movie, in that it sets the stage, all the players get on board, and then little mini episodes happen within the rest of the movie. And it's all got echoes, like I said, of the past, and echoes of what they're doing, but they're old. They're 45 now. And
you can read it on their faces.
Yes.
And that's why it's not a look at revisiting the glory days.
Exactly. And like what I thought was amazing was just like the little touches in that, where, you know, like, so Spud, you know, has a son and is estranged from his wife and the son because he's a junkie and can't get his shit together. And just every time that even gets referred to, the pain on his face. Right. I'm aware, you wonder why he would stay on heroin, but you get the sense that, oh yeah, this is the horrible vicious cycle that he wants to get off of, but he sees what it's done to his life, so he goes back to it, you know, and just like the pain of that. And then somebody like Sick Boy, who clearly is, you know, hasn't moved on. And they there was one scene that really struck me, was that when Sick Boy and Renton are hanging out in his apartment and they're plotting what they're going to do, and Sick Boy's in the bathroom and they show him bleaching his hair. And
I have to take a moment here.
Why?
He still looks cool as hell.
Well, yeah, no, he still looks cool as hell, but the image of this 45-year-old man applying bleach to his hair was just so unbelievably sad. You know, and like to see what he's doing to keep up this image of him being, you know, cooler than fuck and all this sort of stuff. And you get, and you just kind of seeing behind the curtain, and it's just like, and like it was, it's such a subtle way to do it. And they never acknowledged it.
That's a really good point.
It's just like that image alone. Cause your first thought is like, oh, that's not cool at all. And you're like, oh fuck, he's not cool. Here's this guy I spent the past 20 years thinking was cool as hell. And it's a sham.
Mm-hmm.
And I it just, oh God, this just hit me on multiple levels, and it's yeah.
Well, I mean, the whole time, like, it's interesting because, again, if you're very familiar with the first movie, and also the people, like the actual actors, you spend the whole time looking at them, and then they show you them young, and then they go back, and like, yep. Ewan McGregor doesn't look that bad or that old or anything.
He looks great, actually, of all of them.
No, he totally does, you know, but he just looks old.
Yep.
And it's really, it was really fascinating to do. And the other thing is that, like, so Ewan McGregor's not a great actor. Like, I like him a lot. I spent a lot of time, like, I watched the motorcycle documentary where he drives. I watched both of them all the way through. Like, he's like a good guy. And for years I tried to be a big fan of his work, but like, he's not a great actor.
Oh, I love him. I think
I love him too. Yeah. I do too. But he has charisma. But there's lots of things where he's in movies and I'm like, I'm just looking at Ewan McGregor. Like, I'm not seeing anything else. But the second that this movie started,
oh, he's Renton.
And whatever he was that he to watch him actually transform into that guy and play a role better than anything else. Like, you watch him in Star Wars and it was fun and whatever, him, not the movie, but you know, but he's, you know, it, you're aware that it's him doing Alec Guinness,
right?
Like, you and other things, like his accent always slips when he tries to do him. He's got a bad American accent. That's a big part of it. But in this, like, literally the way that he walked, it wasn't just Renton from then, it was Renton now.
Yep.
In a really, it was really wonderful acting. Yep. In that sense. I mean, they all did that to a certain degree. It was most obvious to me with Ewan McGregor. We've seen him so much more than everybody else.
Right, right.
You really inhabited that world.
Yeah, and what I thought was just great about this was, like you said, like they combined footage from the first movie with this movie in the form of flashbacks, in the form of echoes, in the form of memories. Mm-hmm. But then they also introduced flashbacks to all of them as children. Mm-hmm. Which I felt was even more poignant, which is really, you know, being emotionally manipulative, but, you know, driving home the bond that this group of friends have, you know, the going back all these years, like the shots of the home movies of Renton and Sick Boy in this pub, and they are now the only people in, you know, like, and it's just like, oh, wow. And, you know, and it really, it preyed on sentimentality and nostalgia, but it even called it out in the movie. Like, it, you know, there's one point when Renton and Sick Boy are talking and going over whatever, and Sick Boy chastises Renton for, you know, for giving into his nostalgia and all this sort of stuff. I'm like, so it's aware of it, you know, but it doesn't feel I feel like you hold it, you know, me to the fire more often than anybody in terms of, you know, like, do you like this just because you remember liking it or because it's actually good? Right. And I feel like that
I'm a great friend. Obviously.
You are a great friend. No, you are. Because I feel like that is at the crux of this.
Well, this is like the thing is what we experience in our world of talking about comic books and bullshit that's comic book related is a form of nostalgia. But really, it's product marketing for the most part. This is the act. This is what nostalgia actually this is what Don Draper was talking about with the carousel.
Yeah.
Like, this is a nostalgia of what it was before. And for anybody involved in the movie, they understand what it is to look at this thing that they did 20 years ago, the same way that we know what it was like to watch this thing 20 years ago. And you think about that time that's passed and the difference. Now you feel the same, but you feel different and you know how to feel about that. And Renton says something at one point when he admits to Simon, what his life is actually like now, you know, and he's like, I don't know what to do now. And I was like, that hit on me too. Like that worked. Which was the feeling through the whole thing.
Well, yeah, because the irony of that is that, you know, like the joke of the first movie that continues on in this movie, or the thing that, you know, kind of Trainspotting was always connected with was Renton's whole choose life speech. you know, was the whole, the idea of, you know, like in the first Trainspotting, they're making, you know, there was the anti-drug campaign in the UK.
I did not know that was a commercial.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Which is funny because now it has that much more. Imagine if you were able to connect with it back in 1996.
Yeah, no, it would have totally worked.
But yeah, so that whole thing was, you know, in reaction to an anti-drug campaign in the UK, where instead of choosing drugs, you should choose life. And them as heroin addicts were using that as a punchline, you know, as say, you know, and you get the whole, you know, kind of, you know, and making fun of, you know, it almost reminds me of, you know, another movie close to our hearts, Goodfellas, where, you know, these schnooks who are living a normal life, we're choosing life because we're doing all this kind of crazy stuff, whatever. And what it has now happened is that, you know, McGregor Renton gets out at the end of the first movie and then chooses life. He moves to Amsterdam. He gets a degree in accounting. He gets a job at a software company. He has a wife, you know, and like does the whole thing, and it doesn't work. And he ends up back where he started 20 years later. And like you said, he doesn't know what he's doing. And that's why it's that much more, it's easier to understand why he would slip back into what he had done, because he did the right thing, and it still left him empty inside. And you got to wonder.
And he spent so much time thinking about what bullshit it all was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And when you talk about the choose life and they explain the joke, that's another example of something that should not work.
Yep. And yeah, so he explains the joke, and then he then gives it contemporary contextualization, where he makes fun of now. Choose Snapchat, choose Facebook, choose, you know, stupid status updates that give you a false sense of communication and all that sort of stuff. He's aware of the world that he lives in, but he's still at 45, 46 making fun of it because he thinks he's smarter than all that, but he's got nothing because they've never moved on. You know, emotionally, they've never moved on. And I feel like what this movie was that, like, you know, having Renton come back and face the music for what he did to them, and having the violence with Begbie, and having, you know, like, you know, kind of picking up the pieces of their friendships, that's what they all needed to do in order to move on. And, you know, it leaves, at least the movie ends, you know, I do have a problem with the very, very ending, but I feel as if it ends, of all people, with Spud, with a sense of, okay, this chapter is over, and now I can move on, I can move forward. Mm-hmm. And it kind of left me kind of optimistic. My only complaint about the end of the movie is that, so what happens is that during the movie, the prostitute who's Sick Boy's kind of girlfriend finds out that Spud has a great storytelling capability and encourages him to write. And he starts writing all the stories of all their life stuff. And then at the end of the movie, he's put all the papers together. He's sitting with his estranged wife or mother of his son, and she reads it. And you're like, oh, wow, okay, he's going to be a writer. And then she just looks at him and says, I think I've got a name for the book. And I was like, oh, I wish they hadn't said that. Because you know what? The next line was, and we were all train spotting. And
they didn't
say
it,
need it. I didn't need it. No, no. But she shouldn't have even said, I know of a title. It should just ended with her looking at him, and that's it. You know, like, but that's my only complaint.
Have you read the book?
No, I have not.
I don't think I ever have. I get it mixed up. I know that, like, I read A Clockwork Orange, and I bought that in train spotting. You know, I think I ever started train spotting. But I like the idea, because I believe it's written.
Well, yeah, no, I like the idea too. I just wish she hadn't said it. That's all. It was a little more sense of obvious than I wanted. But going back to the topic of Trainspotting, I like that they gave us the flashback to them in the train station that we didn't see in the first movie that explains the title and gives context to Begbie. Like, I thought that was, you know, because Begbie was this force of nature in the first movie, and then you really understood who he was in this movie.
And I feel like there were other things. What I think is, this is the point to really sort of bring up. Like,
yeah.
Begbie is all-time top five villain.
Yes.
I mean, he really, like, he is – I watch this and I go, oh, I remember how terrifying he is. Yeah. In a very real sense of, like, he's this person in your life, if he was in your life, that like, you can't escape.
Yep.
And you have to deal with him. And then again, in that Echo fashion, they keep doing it over and over again, both visually and – but having, like – him walk into that room with Spud and Spud being genuinely scared. I believe there was another thing like that where he was feeling threatened by him in the first movie.
Yep.
And that, like, I can't escape from this. I can't do anything. I can't get away from him. And he has no morale. There's nothing to reason with. It's the shark, you know, in Jaws. And I was just remembering what an amazing villain. I mean, like, Darth Vader level villain,
yeah,
but more scary, and he captured it again perfectly. And like, Carlisle is a perfectly fine actor, yeah, but almost unfortunately, he was so good in the first thing that I ever saw him in that you know, that's what it is.
It pales in comparison, yeah.
And it does. I mean,
and he was great in The Full Monty, and totally. He's been great in other stuff. He was on Once Upon a Time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's had a good career, but, like, he will always be Begbie, and it just, it's that scene in the pub when he throws the pike, when he throws the glass over the rail.
But the twist in that was him enjoying hearing it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting, and like, sort of like, is he seeing himself as a hero or not? Like, and you know, that was great. I remember that. And that, the way that scene yo-yoed, and you thought, oh, Spud's going to be okay. He's not going to be okay. Like, you never knew.
Right.
And I think that's what the feeling is like with that character. And did it bug you that – it bugged me that they subtitled them in the beginning a little bit, even though it was like stylish subtitles.
I read – I don't know if it's true or not, but I read – and maybe somebody listening will correct us. But I thought I read that the subtitles were added for the American release.
That's what I figured.
Because we're idiots. Because
it wasn't every sentence.
Yeah, exactly. Just the really hard-to-understand ones. But
that's a very thick accent. I remember watching the first movie and walking out with everybody else and all – like whatever the people I went with, like, I didn't understand a word of that. I was like, I understand every word of that. Like,
No, it's funny because I think knowing, you know, I've been lucky enough to meet several Scottish people and it clicked at one point.
Yeah.
And once it clicks, then you don't need to worry about it again. So, the stylus captioning was kind of annoying. Well, how did you feel about Spud's boxing interlude?
I guess it didn't need to be there if I'm going back on it, but it's a step on the road to him replacing heroin with something.
Well, yeah, there's a moment in the movie when Renton and takes Spud to, he saves Spud from overdosing and trying to kill himself, which I thought was a great scene too. You know, mm-hmm. the visual of him falling from the top of the building, like that was very echoing of the first movie, you know, falling into the carpet and that sort of thing. But and so Renton, in an attempt to save Spud, takes him out running, and he says, which is ironic because they're running in the first movie because they're stealing. Right. It was like that. But and he's telling that Spud, you know, he needs to stop doing heroin and chat, you know, but he's addicted. So be addicted to something else. Like, I don't know, boxing. And so Spud goes to the gym, the boxing gym, to give it a shot. And there's a dorky little like Rocky-esque montage with a still, you know. But the thing was, like, at the moment in the movie, it was lighthearted enough that I laughed, you know, like,
yeah,
it was.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, because it was almost like what's going on in his head. But what I liked about that scene was that he walks out of the boxing gym. And that's another one of those echo moments, because it's the road where him and Renton were running from being, you know, after
the movie opened.
The first movie. Exactly. And then, you know, and then.
And they let you live there for a second. It wasn't hinted at even at all. It was like, this is where it is and what happened.
Yeah.
And you're going to sit here with us for a second.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Spud lives in Edinburgh. He probably walks around it all the time. But the fact that Renton came back, you're like, oh, yeah, this is where this happened. Right. And then that echoes later on when, you know, Begbie is chasing Renton, and there's the whole scene in the garage, which I thought was you know, like, you know, well tense, and you know, Renton jumps on top of a car to get away from him, and the car stops short, and he falls, and he stands back up, puts hands on the hood, and the exact shot from the iconic original one, but it didn't feel forced, like you said. It's something that shouldn't have worked that worked.
Yeah, no, you saw it coming. Oh, they're gonna do that.
Yep.
And I'm okay with it, because I should not have been okay with it. Yeah. But I don't know why. He has a winning smile. I mean, you got it, like the best smile in movies.
Well, there's that, and then what might be the best scene in the movie is when Renton and Sick Boy go to rob the 1690 loyalists, right? The extreme Protestants of Scotland, who are celebrating an ancient battle from 1690, and they're. That spur of the moment singing performance that scene was just hysterical. It was great, I thought. This movie was I walked out of it feeling that this movie was better than it should have been. Like, I really was expecting the worst, and I couldn't believe how amazing I felt after it. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
I think I don't know what to expect. I expected it to be pretty good, but with the idea, like, it, you know, like, I don't know if this is a good example, but when they did more episodes of Arrested Development, like, it all should have been great, but I was like, I don't think they should have done that. Yep. And like, at this point, like, I'm putting this up there with the great sequels. I mean, like, it really, because of the way that they did it, because they waited 20 years, they got all the same people. You got a filmmaker who is better than he was then, even though he was amazing then.
Yep.
And they didn't shy away from that stuff. And they did it in such a way. And sometimes I often wonder, maybe as Americans, the otherness of something that's British is just enough to make it seem like it's deeper than it is. I don't know if I'm victim to that sometimes, but it made me think of that a little bit. But, you know, like oh, you know what? The other thing, that's what I was going to mention, is that in the beginning of the movie, when Rent gets back to Edinburgh, the sky's light.
Yep.
And you can see the city, which you never could before because it was always gray and dark and shitty.
Yep.
In the first movie. So now you've got – I literally have a light shown on everything as he looks at it.
Yeah.
And so, again, that felt different. But also you just got a better sense of place.
Yeah.
Where they were as he walks up to his house, I didn't really recognize it because it was never shot in that way before.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But so as soon as you get inside and you see that staircase and you see that,
oh, yeah,
that kitchen table, that's exactly the same and all that sort
and
of
his,
stuff.
And his dad was Mormont of the.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which he was the same actor from the original one. And also that's a great point. And when Renton goes home and, you know, his mother's passed away, you get the sense that his mother's passed away. They never actually say it, but she's missing, you know, and his room is exactly the same way. And he gets back to his room and he goes and he puts that Iggy Pop record on and he puts the needle on the record and you hear that first beat of Lust for Life and he immediately stops it, you know, because it's like, I can't go back there.
That record was pristine, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
And that was like, everything is, so there was no noise at all. It's weird that turntable would be in such good shape, but okay, I'll allow it.
Yeah, but you know, I thought that was very, you know, poignant in terms of like starting it, and like that's that beat and that start of Lust for Life is what kicked off the last movie, and he's not going to let it happen again. And then finally, at the end of the movie, he goes back home and he puts the record on, and he just is an old 45-year-old guy dancing in his childhood bedroom. And, you know, and like I thought that was a fitting end to the movie. Like,
it's a hell of an image.
Yeah, really great image. How did you feel about the overall the scan that, you know, they get ripped off by the prostitute, like that, you know, like kind of what goes around comes around kind of.
Yeah. I mean, like I saw that coming from a while away. Oh, yeah. You know, like they don't learn, they make bad decisions. They don't learn from their mistakes and they're self-destructive.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody younger and smarter, and like when Kelly MacDonald said, she's too young for you.
Yeah. Oh.
That meant a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, you can't keep up anymore. Not she's too young for you to date or sleep with or whatever. And well, I like
that was also the reference that she was too young for him.
True. Like, right. Yeah. Levels. Yeah. Levels upon levels. But multiple like as levels, you look yeah. back, like that right there was the warning that something was going to go wrong. And then when she starts talking about opportunity, what was the other word? It was betrayal and opportunity. Yeah. You know, yeah. like
opportunity, I mean, followed by betrayal. That's what Spud yeah, and, you know, kind of ran, you know.
So they're pounding these themes into your head.
Yeah.
And it like it worked with that. History repeats itself. It's going to do that thing. You're going to get taken like you got took.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a slight nihilism to it where like, and Simon had said something like, you know, I don't blame you. Of course you were going to steal from me,
right?
You know, which is her, which is, you know, whatever. As they're all trying to go after whatever it is they can, and you know, she had. They almost gave her a little moralistic sort of ending, which I thought was. Maybe a little heavy-handed, if anything. I don't know if they needed to, but they also alluded to that earlier. Like everything was like set up way in advance, and then had a payoff at the end.
Yeah.
They kept doing that over and over again. It's these circles. So
exactly, and that's the thing.
That was what was supposed to happen.
It had to happen in order to move forward. Like I think so much of this movie was that they were all stuck in 1996. For the past 20 years, and that the events of this movie is what helped them to move forward. And, you know, it's really kind of sad because, you know, I think that's how it ended. I mean, I think that
the end,
you know,
with Simon and Renton sitting on the couch, like I thought that was them just giving up into is what we are. I mean,
or it could be that, or at least saying that this part of our life is now over and now we need to figure out what to do, you know? Yeah, I mean, at least for Spud, I mean, you know, Carl, you know, Begbie goes back to jail, which is appropriate, but you know,
which means there's a chance for a third.
Yeah, no, I don't want to revisit.
I want to see them at 66.
Yeah, well, you know what they would be? They would be Carrie and I talked about this. They would be the old men at the pub, just sitting there drinking, unaffected by anything.
Yeah,
you know, that's really what they would be.
The idea was mine.
The only other thing I wanted to highlight was the nightclub scene.
in the, you know, you get again, like Renton goes to the bathroom and he looks in at a toilet stall. And for a moment you remember that scene, right? But then it becomes something completely different where you get possibly one of the funniest scenes of Renton and Begbie in the stalls next to each other, realizing that the other person is there. Like that, that I thought was a masterful scene. That was great.
Yeah, it's interesting. They actually, I think that they referred to that image later when Rent is in the mirror room.
Yeah.
And he pulls himself up out of the through the ceiling, which was the other side of that toilet shot.
Yep.
Which was, I liked that there were those different echoes of it throughout there. Yeah. By the way, if I had another thing that didn't make sense, if Renton is a full-time runner who is trying to not be addicted to heroin, no way Begbie keeps up with him. Yeah, well, except for the power of rage and or Viagra.
I was just going to say, yes, I think he had a little bit helping him. So,
yeah.
So, all right. Well, so here we are, two aging hipsters dealing with our mortality. But I can't think, I honestly, T2 Trainspotting hit all the notes in ways that I didn't think that they were able to be hit. And it's still more than a week since I've seen it. And I still think about it every day. It's partially because I can't get Born Slippy out of my head.
Yeah, but I think I know what the music's going to be here.
That's a whole nother thing. So all in all, Josh, you give it thumbs up?
Oh, a huge thumbs up. I mean, like it's like Godfather 2, yeah. Empire Strikes Back kind of sequel.
Yeah.
Maybe even better because it's like a bookend kind of thing. Not better, but you know what I mean? Different kind of thing. I was really, I'd be shocked if I see a movie I like more than this at the end of the year. That'll be a really good year for movies if that's the case. But yeah. I also recognize that it might just be my particular bag.
Yeah. All right. Well, so you can usually find us over at ifanboy.com where we're talking about comic books and comic book movies and TV shows. And who knows if we'll do another one of these. We might get fired for doing this. We don't care. this was a moment in time that I think we needed to talk about, Josh. It's very cathartic for me. Hopefully it was for you too.
Yeah. I was like, you want to do it tonight? You're like, really? Yeah, now.
Let's do it. So, all right. So head over to ifanboy.com where you can catch everything. And until then, choose life.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.